Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today pricing expert for accountants, Mark Wickersham. Hello to you, Mark.
Hi there, Rob. Great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. And Mark, for the benefit of people listening that may not have come across you, just tell us a bit about your background and how you got into what you do.
I help accounting professionals, accountants, bookkeepers, make more money, improve their profits by helping them price. How did I get there? Well, I'm an accountant myself. I've been in this profession a long time, since 1988. I qualified as a chartered accountant in 91. And in 1996, I started my own accounting firm. I started from a bedroom in my house, grew it up very, very fast to over 200 clients in the first 2.5 years. Wow. And that sounds really successful, I know, but I wasn't. 2.5 years in, I was in a complete mess. I hadn't made any money. My debts were growing through the roof. I was constantly going back to the bank with the begging bowl out saying, please, sir, can I have a bigger overdraft? In a nutshell, I was overtrading. I was growing too fast. But I realized back end of 1998, I realized that the single biggest mistake I was making was I actually had no idea how to price. No. I'd grown up in the accounting profession believing that you had to keep timesheets, add up the hours and bill based on the hour. Mm. And because I was desperate to grow this price, I was also way too cheap. I was scared of that reaction that people would say I was too expensive and wouldn't win the work. And it was in back end of 98, early 99, where I came across this concept of value pricing. And I started to figure out some pricing systems which had some incredible results in my firm. And then I was fortunate that a year later, I was invited to speak at a seminar, and it went down so well that I've now been teaching accounting firms my pricing processes for the last 18 years now. And also because it had such a dramatic effect on my accounting firm, a few years later, I was able to sell it in a management buyout. The managers bought the firm off me. They couldn't have done that in 98, 99. It was a mess. Yeah. But just changing the way that I priced had a huge impact. And I've had great fun over the last 10, 20 years helping other accounting firms and bookkeepers get the same sort of results. Mm.
And does it matter, Mark, whether it's a small one-man band accountant or a large professional top 100 firm when it comes to pricing?
Absolutely not. I would suggest that the larger firms, and I'm including the big four in this, are just as clueless as smaller firms, because they're headed up by technicians and accountants just don't know how to price. We're not taught how to price. So I think the problem goes throughout the entire profession. I tend to work with smaller firms, and that's simply because whilst I have really made a big difference to bigger firms, I find it quite frustrating that sometimes partners don't all get on board at the same time, whereas sole practitioners, if I teach them something, they go and do it, they get results, they tell me the results, and that inspires me to do more of it.
Yeah. How have we got into this mess with pricing and accountants?
I think we've always been in this mess, but I think for certainly as long as I've been in the profession, and certainly for several decades before that, I think that it's this obsession with the billable hour, with timesheets. I think it got worse once technology enabled us to automate the adding up of hours using software, which has been around for 30, 40, 50 years, time tracking software. And so that takes out the creativity out of pricing. And yet pricing is one of the four P's of marketing. It's marketing. It shouldn't be delegated to an admin job of adding up hours. We got away with it as a profession 10, 20, 30 years ago because the profession was making money because of things like, for example, all limited companies had to have an audit. And so firms were making money out of audit and stuff like that. But as technology's come along, and particularly this cloud technology, it's starting to automate much of the compliance work. And in actual fact, at some point, the compliance work will disappear because it is being automated. And therefore, the profession's getting more competitive. It's getting increasing downward pressure on fees. Firms are starting to really feel the pinch. They're finding that they're working longer hours than ever before, but making less money. And this trend will continue for as long as firms cling to the billable hour and don't shift.
Mm. We'll dip into pricing a little bit more, but I've known you for many years. And for me, you are the leading pricing expert in the world for accountants, but are there different philosophies and different movements out there when it comes to pricing?
It's actually a very new topic. If we go back to the 1980s, for example, up until the 1980s, it was only ever talked about in academic circles, professors doing papers on pricing.
Right.
And it only really got into the commercial world in the early 1990s. And then we've seen kind of a bit more of an explosion in the last 10, 20 years with the popularity of price psychology, and even more recently, in the last decade, an explosion of interest in behavioral economics, which has a big impact on pricing. And a lot of what we know about pricing has come out of studies in the last 10, 15, 20 years. So it's a very new topic. Now, within the profession itself, if I go back to when I came across the phrase value pricing, which was in 1999. I learned that from Ron Baker over in the US. At that time, I believe that Ron Baker was probably the only person in the worldwide profession talking about pricing. So he started the whole thing in the profession. I then kind of jumped on board early. And so for many, many years, it was just the two of us, me in the UK, him in the US. I would say in the last 5 or 10 years, there's been an increasing number of people talking about value pricing in the profession because it's becoming now probably the most talked about topic, and that's partly driven by, interestingly enough, the technology companies, the likes of Intuit, who do QuickBooks, because obviously we're moving to the cloud technology, and the likes of Intuit, the likes of Xero want to get more accountants on board. And so what they're doing is they are adding value by educating. So they are all these companies are getting the leading thought leaders on board to teach these messages. And they're talking about it themselves. The problem is the technology companies get it wrong sometimes. So I know that Intuit have been at fault of talking about value pricing is fixed pricing, which is not. And unfortunately, a lot of other people are coming out the woodwork and now kind of latching onto this thing about pricing and teaching it. And unfortunately, many of them are getting it wrong, which is interesting. I was talking to Ron Baker a few months ago in America, and we were talking about all the people are out there now who are talking about it and doing podcasts and webinars on pricing. And so many of them still aren't grasping the foundations, which is interesting.
Well, you're on a crusade, aren't you, Mark? Do you have a vision for this? Do you have a mantra? Do you want to change the world?
I want to change the accounting profession. And for me personally, I am only interested in working with accountants because I'm an accountant. Mm. Accountants and bookkeepers. I believe this is a great profession. I think that the accounting profession has the ability to change people's lives. But unfortunately, we're kind of missing out on that because we're so focused on just adding up the numbers and doing the compliance work. Yeah. I think we can do much more for our clients. But the reason why firms aren't doing that is because they're too busy. And the reason they're too busy is because they've got too many clients and they're underpricing. And if they can get their pricing right in the first place, it kind of gives them some space in their lives, some extra profit, some income, some time to start then doing more for their clients and doing what the profession really should do. So I guess my crusade, if anything, is I just want to make it a better profession. I want to help accountants and bookkeepers make more money and have a better life, do more fun work, work with better quality clients, and make a difference to people's lives themselves.
Well, in the small amount of time that we've got, give us pricing 101. What's ground zero? If accountants want to get into it a bit more, what are the foundations?
Firstly, there's only two ways to price, if we really, really simplify it. And the two ways to price is cost plus pricing, which is the supply side of the demand, supply and demand curve, cost plus pricing and value pricing. Cost plus pricing, it was demonstrated over 100 years ago by the Austrian School of Economists that it's a crazy way to price. Cost plus pricing simply means adding up your costs, adding on something for your hoped for profit, and that's your price. And that's effectively what time-based billing is. It's a form of cost plus pricing. And it doesn't take into account what the customer wants, what the customer values. Value pricing, on the other hand, starts with the customer, and it starts with a conversation around, well, what is value? And then we come up with a price based on value. And that's the only two ways of pricing. Now, within that, there are many different techniques. So with value pricing, we could use contingent pricing. We could use demand-led pricing. We could use percentage pricing. There are so many different techniques within that. But essentially, it's just two options. We either do cost plus or we do value pricing. And all of the evidence shows that there's only one really sensible way of pricing, which is value pricing. The problem is it's very, very difficult. It's insanely difficult because, firstly, value is subjective. You can't touch, you can't feel, you can't measure value. And it's then made even harder still because everybody values things differently. So, for example, take a tax return. How do you measure the value that someone places on you completing a tax return? You can't measure it. And then to make it harder is no two clients will place the same value on you doing a tax return. And then just to make it even harder still is what we do as a profession is quite complicated. We're not selling cups of coffee like Starbucks, and that we're selling complex services, and every client is different with unique situations. And that makes it hard to price. And that, I think, is why firms have just given up and just added up hours, because adding up hours is easy, but it's crazy. So we have to figure out ways to value price. And that's largely about the conversation with the client. It's about figuring out what's important to them, what's valuable. So, for example, if I just give a simple example, if you were to ask the client, if it's a brand new client and you were going to do their annual financial statements, you could ask the client, who would you like to have as your main contact at the firm here? Would you like it to be me, or would you like it to be my assistant, Fred? Well, clients always say you. They always want to work with the partner. And that's fine if they want to work with the partner. But if they want to work with the partner, that's because they value that. And that therefore should be factored into our pricing. We should charge a higher price. And then if the price is then too high, we can then say, well, the reason it's this price is because you want me to be the primary point of contact. However, most of our clients deal with Fred. They love Fred. If you want to get a lower price, then work with Fred. People love that. And then what you do is you basically give the client choice. They choose based on their perception of the value of the various options you give them. If they value working with you, they will pay the higher price. If they don't value it, they'll pay a lower price and work with Fred. So that's the essence of value pricing. It's figuring out, what does the client value? Give them some choices, and then come up with prices that are based on the things that they specifically value and want, based on the client's perception of what they value.
Mm, love that. Is it a case, Mark, that the client is always right? Do they know what they want?
No, they don't. And that's also part of the problem. So we have to have a process when we're having the conversation with the client to figure out what they value. We want to figure out what is the optimal price, or what economists call the buyer's reservation price. And that basically means what's the maximum price that that person's willing to pay. And we need to figure that out. And what we can't do is, obviously, we can't ask them. We can't say, what's the maximum price you're willing to pay for my tax return? So we can't ask that. So we have to figure it out using various techniques. And one of the things I say is, even if you could be a mind reader, that wouldn't help, because at the start of the conversation, the client doesn't know the maximum price they're willing to pay, because at the start of the conversation, they don't actually understand the value of what you do. They don't understand the benefit of the service that the accountant is offering. So actually, before we even talk about price, we have to become better as a profession at communicating value. And that's something that we have been awful at. And I know I was in when I was running my firm. We assume the client knows what it is that we do and why we do it. If I can give you a simple example, if I was a bookkeeper or an accountant doing bookkeeping work, we might say to the client, when we do your bookkeeping, we reconcile your bank account. And we sit there all smug thinking that's awesome. They're going to love that. The reality is the client probably has no idea what reconciling a bank account means. It's jargon. And what we have to do is use techniques like turning features into benefits to communicate the value. So you might say, in that example, you might say, one of the things we'll do as part of the bookkeeping is we'll reconcile your bank account. Let me explain why we do that. We do that because when we reconcile your bank account, we know that we've recorded every single piece of income, which means you can sleep at night in the full knowledge that if the revenue ever investigate you, you know that all your sales have been captured. Another reason that we reconcile your bank account is because we then know that we've recorded all of your income, which means that you maximize your tax deductions and pay the least amount of tax. And a third reason we reconcile it is when we reconcile your bank every month, you know that your accounts are correct, which means that when you look at your monthly information, you can make better business decisions based on more accurate records. And as a result of that, you'll build a more successful business. So you can see a bank reconciliation actually has a huge impact. It's massively valuable, but we never tell people that. And if we don't tell people that, how can we possibly expect them to see our price as being a fair and reasonable price? They'll see it as being expensive.
So when you tell them that and you convey that value, how do you then put a price on that?
Okay, interesting question. Well, then we need some techniques, because there's different levels of complexity we can go into. So if we just start at a really simple level, which is the starting point of my teaching, one of the biggest myths in the profession, which I alluded to earlier, is people keep talking about fixed pricing. A lot of people are saying we've now moved away from time-based billing to fixed pricing. And they think that fixed pricing is value pricing. And it's not. It's a huge mistake. And it worries me when I hear so-called experts, the new experts on the block talking about fixed pricing.
What is the definition of fixed pricing, Mark?
Fixed pricing is giving someone a fixed price. And actually, to be more specific, it's giving a single fixed price is not value pricing. If I give you an example, if you came in to see me because you want your tax return doing, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to give a fixed price up front. It's going to cost you, Rob, £500 to have your tax return done. That's not value pricing. That's a fixed price that's not based on your circumstances. It can't be a value-based price till I've figured out what you specifically value and you get a unique price. So it's not value pricing. And further, it's the wrong price anyway. If anybody gives a single fixed price, if you price a service at a certain price, that's wrong. And the reason for that is that if I said to you, Rob, yeah, we'll do your tax return, it's £500, you will certainly have a number in your mind that you're prepared and willing to pay. The probability that that number is exactly £500 is so unlikely, it's pretty much 0%. You will have a number. That number will be either bigger or smaller. And if you're thinking there, if you're sat there thinking, do you know what, this tax return sounds okay, it's probably worth 350 quid, and I say 500, then I lose out because I'm too expensive and I've lost the sale. If, on the other hand, you're thinking, wow, this will take away so much stress, this will make my life so much easier, this is probably worth £1,000, and I say £500, great, I've made a sale, but I've left money on the table, so I lose either way. So having a single fixed price is always the wrong price, and it's always a form of cost-plus pricing, because the question I then ask people is, well, where did that £500 come from? And the answer is, well, I looked at how much I used to spend doing VAT returns, and I took a guess about how long it might take to do tax returns. That's a form of time-based billing at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And my friend Ron Baker has a great phrase. He says fixed pricing is time-based billing in drag, which I love, because that's all it is. There's this huge misconception. Now, the first thing we can do to move to value pricing, and this is going to sound really simple, but it's actually very powerful, is what I call menu pricing, where you give the clients three choices. You have, I don't like this label, but it'll make sense to you. You have a bronze, silver, and gold version of a tax return.
Yeah.
And you give the client the three choices. And therefore, we give them three prices. Now, that now is going into the realms of value pricing, albeit at a simple level, but we're now starting to value price, because what happens is the client looks at those three options and they weigh up the value of each package in their mind, and they will choose the package and the price which for them represents the best value. So once we move to giving people choices, giving them three options, we now start to get the opportunity to earn higher fees, because some clients will choose to buy the more expensive options. It's not us putting the price up, which is uncomfortable. We're letting them choose. And that's a form of value pricing. Now, it is simplistic, but it is a great place to start, because I found that many firms have said just doing this has increased their average fees by 20%, because some clients, and usually most clients, actually choose to buy more stuff. So that's a great starting point for this whole process. Now, we can start to build on that. Once we start to use things like technology, we can get quite sophisticated with our pricing, because ultimately, the more the client can choose exactly what they get, the closer we can get to their buyer's reservation price, the optimal price. The one problem with giving three options, and it is very, very successful menu pricing, but of course, we're still just giving them three options. So in other words, going back to the tax return example, let's say we had a bronze level tax return at £350, the middle option was £500, and the top one was £1,000. What happens if that customer is actually willing to pay £1,500?
Yeah.
You're not giving them that option, and so you're throwing away the opportunity. Or what happens if someone's willing to pay £800? Well, the £1,000 is too expensive, so they go for the middle one at £500. So you've left £300 on the table. So menu pricing is very powerful, but when we get more advanced, we want to try and start giving the client more choice, more options, because our goal is to figure out what is the best possible price? What's the one that's going to meet their specific needs and what they value at the highest possible level?
But isn't it true, Mark, that a confused buyer never buys? If we give them too many options, is that bewildering for them?
Absolutely, you're correct. If, for example, you're trying to sell your service on a website and they go to the website to see your services and you've got a million options, that's going to create confusion. Absolutely. What you want to do, though, is you in our profession, because we're in the relationship business, we're building relationships with people. We have to price face to face. We have to meet people and talk to them. And so what we do is, yes, we have all of this complexity in terms of our behind the scenes pricing, but we guide them through the process and we keep it simple. And by just asking a series of questions to figure out what they want, and then we guide them through the process. If I give you just another example of a company that does this really, really well, and that's Apple, which is, as you know, the most profitable company on the planet. They understand all of this. And if you ever decide to buy an iMac computer, which I keep buying them, when you go onto their website and you buy an iMac, onto their online store, you'll see that immediately they give you three options. There's three choices of a 27-inch iMac. Why three? Because the research shows that three works. There's some research behind that. And then when you've chosen which of the three models you want, the three options, there's a button at the bottom that says select. And when you hit that select button, they know that that's not the end of the process. Because what happens is once you've said yes, you're in what's called buying mode and you're more predisposed to buy more stuff. Right. And so what Apple then do on the website is they then you go to a page that says, would you like more memory? Here's your different options. And they explain the benefits of the options. And you can just tick a radio button and choose. And then it talks about, would you like a different type of hard drive? Would you like a better warranty? And so on and so forth.
You've done this a few times, haven't you, Mark?
I have. And do you know what? The first time I did this about 3 years ago, when I bought my first iMac, I went in with a budget of £800 and I spent just a few quid short of 2,000. That I'd spent way more than double. And afterwards, I thought, how do they get away with that? Because I know what they're doing to me because I teach accountants this same process. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is the psychology that behind it is so powerful that even if as a customer you know what's happening, you can't help yourself with buying more stuff. It's very clever the way it works.
So what can accountants learn from that?
Well, they can do exactly the same thing. Give the client three options. When the client says yes, make sure you've got an upsell process. So it might be, for example, you're pricing, let's say, tax returns, and the client said, yes, I want the middle option, and you've agreed a price at £600 for the tax return. And then you say, right, you've bought this tax return. One of the things we found, a lot of our clients love to have a review meeting to go through the tax return before it's submitted to make sure everything's correct and so on. Would you like that? And if they say yes, they tick the box. And if they don't want it, they don't tick the box. And most people tick the box out of curiosity to see the price go up. And when the price goes from £600 to £650, they think, well, that's not a big increase. Yeah, I'll have that one. Let me have that. So that's all part of the pricing process, because upselling, as I call that, is a form of price discrimination. In other words, some clients are willing to pay higher prices, and one way to figure that out is by having an upsell process where you then give them enhancements afterwards. They've said yes to buy, and then you ask three or four questions to say, would you like to enhance your service by adding this onto it? Would you like to add this? And actually, that's where most of the profit comes from. Another industry that's mastered this very well, as you'll know, is the car industry. When you go and buy a car and you've gone to the showroom, you've signed the documents for the £20,000 car, you know they'll sit down with you and say to you, would you like this extended warranty? Would you like the alloy wheel protection? It's only £250. And you think, well, I've just spent £20,000. £250 is not a lot. Yes, I'll have that, please. And they give you three or four different upsells and you end up spending an extra £1,000. And that stuff is almost pure extra profit. They do it really, really well. Apple do it really, really well. We can do exactly the same thing. We just have to have a system.
Yeah. McDonald's do it well, don't they, with fries and Coke?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mark, how price sensitive are people? Do clients buy simply on price?
That is the single biggest myth that's holding most accountants and bookkeepers back. Most accountants and bookkeepers, probably every accountant and bookkeeper, is way too cheap. And part of the reason is because they fear that reaction that when they say that's too expensive. We worry that our clients are price sensitive and that we've got to therefore be competitive. We've got to make sure our prices are similar, if not lower, than the firm down the road. And this is a crazy myth, because the reality is no accounting firm or bookkeeper has a price sensitive client. It just doesn't there isn't any price sensitive clients. And I know that shocks people when I say that. So let me explain why. There's been various bits of research done by behavioral economists. And whilst the results differ from research to research, the number of price sensitive people in society is estimated at between 14 and 20%. So it's actually a minority of people. And yes, there are price sensitive people in society. So if you imagine, for example, Rob, the little old retired gentleman who on a Sunday morning wakes up and goes as fast as they possibly can to the front door on their Zimmer frame to grab the free newspaper. And they open up that newspaper. They go through it meticulously, armed with a pair of scissors to cut out the voucher for 3p off butter off down the local store. That's a price-sensitive person. They do exist. The sorts of people that do their shopping in Poundland, where everything's a pound, is price-sensitive. Yeah. But those are not entrepreneurs. They are not business owners. They are not high net worth individuals. They are not people in an accountant's client base. That's the minority. Most people in society, and I know that's certainly me, and I know it includes you as well, Rob, most people are actually value sensitive. And that's a very different thing. And what that means is that when we buy something, when most people buy something, what they really want is the biggest profit on the deal. And by profit, I mean not necessarily in monetary terms, but their perception of the value, the benefit of what it gives them is bigger than the price. So whenever we buy something because we think that what it gives us is worth more than the money that we're giving up. Yeah. And that's what most people want, is the most value. Price is not the most important component. It's the profit on the deal. And I can demonstrate let me demonstrate why my accountants don't have price sensitive clients. If they think about their client base, how many of their clients own an Apple product? Anybody in society that owns an iPad, an iPhone, a Mac computer, by definition, cannot be price sensitive because there are cheaper options in the marketplace. People who buy Apple products are value sensitive, and there's something they see in that product that gives them a bigger profit on the deal, even though it's more expensive. If you think about your clients, how many of the clients go and buy their coffee in places like Starbucks and Costa Coffee? Anybody that buys coffee in Starbucks or Costa Coffee cannot be price sensitive.
But Mark, can you be price sensitive for X but not price sensitive for Y?
To some extent, yes, but ultimately people are value sensitive. And here's the problem. The reason why in our profession, the reason why accountants and bookkeepers think clients are price sensitive is because at some point in the past, clients said, once you've revealed the price, wow, that's a bit expensive. Yeah. And we assume that means they're price sensitive. And once we've heard that two or three times, we start to assume everybody's price sensitive. And here's the big problem. We have to start to understand, well, why do people say that something's too expensive? And the reason why they say something's too expensive is really three reasons. That one of the reasons why someone says that's too expensive and doesn't buy is simply because they haven't got the money. They can't afford it. And now, if that's the case, then that means that you've got to change your client selection criteria. If you're going after people who haven't got any money, that's crazy. But that's quite a rare reason. A second reason is there isn't enough value in the first place. And this should never, ever, ever happen. But if, for example, you were talking to a client because you can save them £500 in tax, but your fee for doing it is £1,000, then there's not enough value. The most common reason, though, the third one, in nearly every single case where someone says that's a bit expensive, is because they don't understand the value. They don't understand the value. And that's the big problem. So if anyone says that's a bit expensive, and they've got the money to spend, so that's not the first issue, the first reason. If they say that's a bit expensive, it's because we haven't done enough to build up the value in their mind. And I said this earlier in our conversation, that's one of our biggest mistakes. We just don't know how to. We don't know the techniques that we can use to build up value. And if we don't, if we are poor at communicating value, then when we reveal a price, if the client doesn't understand the value, it's a natural reaction, it's a knee-jerk reaction to say that's a bit expensive. And then we think, oh, crikey, they are price sensitive. No, they're not. It's just that we haven't done a good enough job at building up the value proposition.
Mark, you're so passionate. I could listen to you for hours, but we're going to have to call it short and get you on again. There's so much more we haven't discovered today. If people want to learn more about you, how might they reach you and what might they find?
The simplest way is LinkedIn. Just connect on LinkedIn. If you say that you've heard me on the podcast, and if you are an accountant or bookkeeper, let me know and I'll send you some links to some various free stuff. Every month I do a short online training session where I teach value pricing, and I do that for free. So just contact me, get on the list, and once a month I'll just send you an email saying I'm running an hour session on value pricing. Come and join me.
Super. This has been superb, Mark, today. Would you just leave us with one comment, one piece of advice for accountants that want to price better?
The most important advice is kind of a willingness to change and just to recognize that there is a better way to price. I can give so many examples of firms where they've said to me they've increased their prices by sometimes double. I have one bookkeeper who got seven times the price that he would normally have got, which is a huge amount, 600% increase. We're not talking about small amounts. Pricing can have a huge impact. And so the starting point is just be open-minded that there's a different world out there of price psychology and behavioral economics. And the problem is, for accountants and bookkeepers, most of them want to make more money. They want to grow their business, and they think the answer to that is to win more clients. And that's not the right. All accountants, all bookies have already got too many clients as it is. That's why they're too flipping busy. Stop being obsessed with winning new clients. Instead, focus on getting your pricing right. And only when you've got your pricing right, then start to win clients.
Mark, you're an evangelist. This has been world class. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Rob. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.